Stress, anxiety, and depression are skyrocketing among children and teens. And Cook Children's Healthcare System is on a mission to bring these topics into the light. I'm Winnie King.
And I'm Dr. Kristen Perch. If you have kiddos in the room, now is the time to put on those headphones. Some of the topics we'll be discussing will not be suited for young ears. This is Raising Joy. Hello, and welcome back to Raising Joy. My name is Kristen Perch, and I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist in Fort Worth, Texas at Cook Children's Hospital.
And I'm the dutiful sidekick.
Oh, please.
Winnie King at
Amazing
Cook Children's.
Person.
Yeah, whatever. But anyway.
We have to get you an acronym.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to work on that.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. So, Winnie, the holidays are upon us.
Yes. Thanksgiving's coming.
And I want to let everyone know about the concept of being a good enough mom.
Oh.
Okay.
So okay.
We talk about this in psychiatry.
Mm-hmm.
And last night, I was not a good enough mom.
Okay. So you're not even taking your own advice.
Oh, I know. But I learned.
Okay. Okay.
So I was an extra mom, and I was trying to cook dinner, taking call from the emergency room.
Ooh.
And trying to craft a ukulele out of cardboard that involved stuffing rubber bands and tie. I mean, insane. Absolutely insane.
Okay.
And this
is a school project, I'm assuming, right?
For my oldest.
Okay.
Because she decided we had to make an instrument. The assignment was you have to make an instrument from things that you can find in your home. Well, maybe I'm an Amazon shopper and maybe we have like pounds of cardboard in our garage. So I was like, listen, this is what we did.
Okay.
And so we found this project that we were going to make. No. Never again.
Okay.
Like it was so frustrating. Crafting is not my ministry.
Okay.
At all.
Can't we put peas on the cardboard or something?
Exactly. Exactly. So as we're doing this, it ended with my husband
ukulele.
And I, a ukulele. My daughter gets her extra from me.
Okay.
So anyway,
so
after we decided, like there was too much parental involvement and I will never again do that.
Okay.
I'm going to, where we will direct her to the Good Enough Project.
Okay.
Like
that
the
she can do.
Easter egg maracas that are appropriate for her age.
Right,
right.
Right.
But she wanted to do the ukulele and I was like, okay.
Okay.
So I'm giving everyone permission.
To
be the good enough mom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Don't be the extra mom.
Okay. Be good enough.
Be the good enough. Don't be me. And it ended with me saying, I will never do that again.
Mm-mm. And it's not like the teacher doesn't know when you roll up with that ukulele that you didn't have anything to do with it.
I know that.
She knows that little girl, didn't it?
There was an X-Acto knife and hot glue. Like no 8-year-old needs access to either of those things. And so she couldn't even help us with it because
it's too dangerous.
She can't.
Oh, my
never
gosh.
Again.
Okay.
Yeah. I failed the assignment.
Okay.
She did not.
Mm-mm, it was you.
Okay. Yes.
Keep learning, because as long as you're breathing, sweetheart, you will keep learning.
That is right.
You will keep learning. But that's good advice. That's good advice.
Don't.
I'm done.
Nope. She's like, never again.
Okay. I hear you. And I'm holding you. I'm holding you accountable.
Okay.
All right. Now, here we go. Boy. And as you said, the holidays are upon us. And that usually means a lot of people gathering, getting together with food, people with eating disorders. This can be a very difficult time of year.
I could see that because a lot of people hide their eating disorder, right? And they don't, and having to sit around a table where that's sort of the focus of the holiday and getting together, like can be really, really stressful.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very glad that we have an expert in the field. Dr. Tyler Wooten is coming to talk to us about this. And he is a child and adolescent and adult psychiatrist at the Eating Recovery Center of Dallas. Welcome to Raising Joy.
Thank you so much.
Boy. So let's talk about eating disorders. And we were kind of getting into this right before we pressed record. So now, when you say the words eating disorder, does that necessarily mean you are restricting your intake of food?
No.
Okay.
It doesn't. It can, but it doesn't always mean that.
Okay.
So like we were talking about, there's anorexia nervosa restricting type.
Okay.
So they're the restrictors.
Okay.
There's also anorexia nervosa binge purge type.
Okay.
So they go back and forth between restricting. And usually they'll restrict all day long, and then they binge and purge at night.
Okay.
There's the prototypical bulimia nervosa.
Right.
That isn't, they may restrict here and there, but what they're primarily doing is binging and purging.
Mm-hmm.
And they may binge and purge multiple times in a mm-hmm. day, or they may just go through their day and then they get to the nighttime and they binge and purge then.
Okay, so they're either restricting or they're somehow getting rid of.
Right.
Intentionally getting rid of.
Yes, and there's more.
Okay.
So,
But there's more.
There's more. So there's also what is now classified as binge eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's at least a couple of times a week that someone is engaging in significant binging behavior, but there's no compensatory purge.
Okay.
And then there's also ARFID, which we treat a lot of at ERC.
ARFID.
It stands for Avoidant Restrictive Food Intake Disorder.
Uh-huh.
And these kids and adults may come in significantly underweight, which they tend to be.
Mm-hmm.
And their ARFID becomes, and I'll explain what it is, so significant that they just stop eating.
Mm.
There's different sort of subcategories of ARFID where it may be a fear of choking because they mm-hmm. choked once.
Oh.
It may be a fear of vomiting because they vomited.
And that's not pleasant.
Nope. It may be a food sort of smell, taste, texture. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It can kind of go into many, many different categories.
I can see that.
Have kids and adults that we are trying to help not only nutritionally,
mm-hmm.
but at least get them back to what they were eating before
mm-hmm.
they became sort of like picking on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they may have always been a little bit particular and picky mm-hmm. and they just, I had one kid, I said, well, what about a banana? And he goes, I will never eat a banana ever my entire life because of the taste and the squishiness mm. and some people can't stand the crunchy,
mm-hmm.
like they need the soft.
Uh-huh.
And so we're trying to get them out of that ultimate rigidity of their thinking and challenge and mm-hmm. challenge and expose while we're rate restoring them.
Mm-hmm. See, I go in the opposite direction. So I'm going down a rabbit hole and we'll get back to where we're supposed to be, but I'm going to go down a rabbit hole.
Let's do it.
So when I'm watching television and I'm watching these people on my 600-pound life,
mm-hmm.
is that a disorder?
That's binge eating.
Okay.
Yeah, because it shows them
mm-hmm.
with just a buffet of food.
And people just bringing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And these women usually have some man yeah. who's living with them, and I'm yeah. sitting around saying, yeah. but what happened to me? Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, so.
Yeah, it's like, love them a little less.
Uh-huh.
You know, just not quite that much.
I mean, and just bring in platters.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so that is a disorder.
Right, that's binge okay. eating disorder.
Okay, got it.
Right.
Okay.
I think it's the one eating disorder my brain does the best with, because I
really?
Love to eat. I love food. And then, so my brain kind of, I'm like, I get that,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
when they're not eating and not eating or binging and purging.
That's hard.
You know, I tell anybody that's new coming to work for us, whether mm-hmm. it's a dietitian or a therapist or a psychiatrist, I say, listen, the greatest teacher of what eating disorders are and will be and your learning curve of understanding this, the greatest teacher will be the patient.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to learn so much
from
in the
them.
Next year from them
mm-hmm.
of what it's like to be them with their eating disorder.
Well, you know, when you were talking about texture, I'm kind of that way with certain foods. You know, like mm-hmm. I cannot take coconut. I don't know why. I don't like coconut texture.
A lot of people don't.
I don't like the texture of coconut. Mm-hmm. It's just, I like the flavor,
mm-hmm.
but that, having that in my German chocolate cake, you can mm-hmm. have it. Bye. See, you don't need to be yeah. a part of that.
Everybody has a little bit of something.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of normal.
Okay.
It's normal.
Like,
my thing is like green peas and Brussels sprouts.
I love Brussels sprouts.
Too.
See, that's what other people say.
They're
I can't.
And I love coconut too.
Mm-hmm.
But give me a tomato. Mm-mm. The slimy. I can't do slimy. But I think everybody has those.
Right, that's normal.
Everybody yeah. has those, yeah. like, texture.
No okra for you.
Oh, no. Mm-mm.
That's nope. not fried.
No way, dude. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And we even let our patients have never-evers. because that is considered normal to like,
yes.
No, I don't want to eat that.
Okay.
I don't like that. I've never liked that.
Okay.
Well, okay.
Well, I mean, don't do it.
We're not going to fight that fight.
Okay.
But I mean, but
patients get to. I wish I had more of that though. I wish I did.
But patients get to like 5 safe foods, oh. You know, as you know, or mm-hmm. like even less than that to where they stop oh, sure. eating. And so it's like, there's a big, like it, to get to ARFID and to need intervention, like it's really,
really bad.
Yes, it's
yeah. The famous one for the little ARFID boys is that the only thing they will eat is Kraft mac and cheese.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-uh.
Yes.
Or sometimes they'll do, you know, like chicken nuggets from
McDonald's. That's
and
all
that's
they'll
all
eat.
They'll eat.
Mm-hmm.
Get
yes.
Mm-hmm. And when you say boys, that's a whole nother thing, because it has always been that I thought, you know, this is a girl problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's a girl. It's always been a girl problem, but now mm-hmm. it's not so much, right?
It's not. And in one of the lectures I give, because I've got a lecture that's it's about males with eating disorders.
Mm.
And 20 years ago, because I've been doing this almost 25 now,
mm.
20 years ago, the statistics said that for every 10 girls with an eating disorder, there was one boy.
Okay.
The newest statistics say for every 3 girls, there's one boy.
Wow.
What?
So it, and when I'm, especially when I'm talking to therapists and dietitians in a lecture.
Child psychiatrist,
yeah.
Raising my hands. Okay.
I say, now, if you've been in this field for a while, do you think it was always 3 and 1 or was it 10 and 1 and it's in a big increase? Nobody raises their hand except for that it has increased in the last 20 years. And that's a part of what my lecture actually is about,
okay.
is that it is a growth and society is feeding that mm-hmm. monster.
So it's not just my body has to be a certain way for the boys?
Or is actually,
it sports?
I mean, for a lot of, so for the typical restricting anorexia in a female, it is about an image that is held of femininity and beauty. Thin is better,
mm-hmm.
right? That mm-hmm. is what they're striving for.
Mm-hmm.
And for bulimia nervosa too, it's mm-hmm. not for ARFID. They're not interested in being skinny.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference for ARFID.
Mm-hmm.
But for the boys, they actually most often come into their eating disorder because they want to be bigger. They want to be stronger, but they want to be cut. And they're getting all kinds of advice from the internet or coaches, perhaps,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that if you do this or do that, and that's how the boys talk to me about it all the time, that is what got them on this journey. I'm going to eat clean. I'm going to eat a lot of protein. I've got to do this keto because I want to lose body fat, mm-hmm. but I want to bulk up and mm-hmm. be bigger and work
mm-hmm.
out.
Mm-hmm.
So it has nothing to do with being thin for the boys, for some of the boys. So there are some boys that come in and they really want to be thin.
But it's still body image.
It is very body image driven.
It's still about body
for sure.
image.
For sure. Eating disorders have always been around, but not like they are today. And all the media and the direct access to all this imagery that they've got on, you know, TikTok and Snapchat and all that.
Instagram,
mm-hmm. all of it. So it's really, I mean, if you want to talk about something that's actually job security, is that this is continuing to make kids sicker and sicker and
mm-hmm.
sicker.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephanie Setliff, who is the medical director along with myself at ERC, We've had many discussions about how our patients are sicker than they used to be when we started.
Dang.
They are much sicker nowadays.
In thinking about the boys, is it that they start kind of this journey mm-hmm. and then it's sort of, I guess, so I rotate whenever I did my residency and training, we had an eating disorder unit. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of, we had a few boys that came through, but for girls, kind of a common story was I was dieting for this thing,
mm-hmm.
something, and then I just couldn't stop. Is it the same thing for boys or
it's
is it
the same,
different?
You know, it is. It's the same thing for boys as it is for girls. Nobody, and I mean nobody, wakes up one morning and decides, I'm going to develop an eating disorder. Mm-hmm. It always is the case that it snuck up behind them. Mm-hmm. It took over their brains. But it starts with diet and exercise. So it talk about a $1 billion industry, diet and exercise is. So it starts out very innocently. And anybody, any kid, especially a teenager, that said, I'm going to eat healthier. The parents are like, great, I'm going to start an exercise program. Everybody goes, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And then the susceptible kids take it and run with it. Because not everybody is really susceptible to develop an eating disorder. But some kids are.
Who's more susceptible?
It's the temperament of particular kinds of kids. So I will, because I've usually got, 2 to 5 new patients a week that I sit with the parents and I talk to the parents before I even meet the kid. So I bring them into a room, the whole team's there. And I will often, if they don't have a lot of questions, because I always want to know if they've got questions walking in the door, immediate burning questions that I need to answer. Mm-hmm. But if they don't, I very often will start describing the temperament of what is typically anorexia nervosa. Bulimia nervosa is a little bit of a different temperament, but anorexia nervosa, they're sweet, they're perfectionistic, they are the ultimate in pleasers, they are conflict avoidant, they are wildly perfectionistic, they are typically straight A students, and they are what we call super feelers. That, you know, some people will think of kids as just being sensitive, you're being too sensitive, but really, they are so incredibly sensitive. So I teach the dads this, that, you know, the filter we're supposed to change in our HVAC, that nobody ever remembers to do.
Glad I'm not alone in that.
Human beings have emotional filters. All human beings have emotional filters. I got a pretty dense one. So a lot of stuff that I should be affected by kind of gets stuck in my man filter. Our kids, it's like they were born without an emotional filter. So every single thing in life gets through. Therefore, life itself becomes traumatic. So they feel everything. They feel big, strong feelings, but they don't talk about them. And they stuff them because they don't want to worry their parents. They don't want to upset anybody. They're so sweet all the time. They're very quiet. Sometimes by the time a kid gets to me, they're mute. They can barely, all I see is their shoulders going up and down, like when I'm asking them questions. So when I describe all this to parents on day one, their jaws drop open and they go, oh my God, that's my kid. I go, I know, I got a hospital full of them.
Right?
I got 96 beds. They're full of kids just like them. And you walk on through the unit, it can be, you can hear a pin drop. It's so quiet. The girls and boys are sitting together because the boys will have the same kind of temperament. And they're just playing cards or they're chatting with each other. It's very quiet.
Oh my God.
Because they're quiet kids.
If you contrast that to the inpatient child psychiatry unit, very different experience.
That's totally different.
It's loud.
Lots of chaos.
Now, bulimia nervosa's temperament can be a little bit naughtier. They can be stinkers. They can.
They like to hide stuff.
They really will tell you what they're thinking.
Thank you very much.
More impulsive.
Right. They're much more impulsive.
Oh, my gosh. So how do the holidays affect these kinds of kids who are dealing with this disorder?
I mean, so we start talking about the holidays when we're doing family education. The kids that are with us on the inpatient unit will be with us and we'll have a Thanksgiving and we'll have, something. But if they are with family, then that kid is about to become the most stressed out that they could possibly be in the entire year when it comes to getting together with family. Like when they're in treatment with us, we're like, please keep it small. Please keep the family gathering as small as possible because the worst time to have a family reunion is when somebody is in eating disorder treatment. And as you know, I mean, every time we get together,
it's food.
It's food.
Yeah, put
we
this on your plate.
Celebrate mm-hmm. with food. Mm-hmm. And most of the kids will talk about how scared they are
Aww.
And how terrified they are of hurting grandma's feeling.
Because they don't want her pumpkin pie or whatever
That's
it
right.
is that she has made.
But then
there's also extreme anxiety about eating the mm-hmm. pumpkin pie.
Mm-hmm.
And the calories that entails. Right. And so they are just stuck.
Right. And the talk, that's mm-hmm. where they really get terrified, is that the family has to be educated. It's why we do family education 3 times a week.
Mm.
It's run by the medical directors. It's mm-hmm. run by Dr. Setliff and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to help the families. If there is extended family, we want the extended family to come mm-hmm. to family education mm-hmm. if they've got close contacts with mm-hmm. this patient.
Grandma, come on in.
Yeah, yes. come on in. Uh-huh. I mean, we need them in there because
yeah.
they need to understand how sensitive, how wounded some of these kids really are with their eating disorder and talking about, well, just a little bit more. Now, this is good and mm-hmm. this is mm-hmm. so yummy. You've always loved this. Why won't you eat it now? Like, the kids just buckle.
I know.
They just buckle under the pressure of that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Do they become suicidal?
Absolutely, they become suicidal.
Wow.
Absolutely, they do. You know, eating disorders are the deadliest mm-hmm. of all mental illnesses. And there is a significant portion of that fatality in the world of eating disorders is because of suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they're really motivated to get better, it is extremely painful and difficult for them to do on an emotional mm-hmm. level.
Okay, I'm going to show my age. Karen Carpenter.
Yeah.
That was the first time, and we've talked about this,
yeah.
that was the first time I ever really understood and saw it,
mm-hmm.
and really grasped the understanding about anorexia.
Yeah.
And she seemed like she was probably a very sweet, pleasing person.
Exactly. So sweet, so pleasing.
Uh-huh. Yep. Didn't want to disappoint anybody.
Nobody.
You know, just really, but that was terrifying looking at her sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Toward
yeah.
the end, it was
right.
bad.
Yeah, there have been many. Gilda Radner.
Oh,
struggled.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sister, you
mm-hmm.
need a hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
yes, she was bad.
What? So if a parent has a kiddo with this temperament mm-hmm. that we talk about, like, what do you, like, I guess, where would a, how do we support those kids in not going
and
on
helping
to
and mm-hmm. helping to develop a filter for them
yeah.
so they're not feeling all of this?
I think that there's many answers to that question, of course. That one of the things is that family systems need to be open and okay with any emotional content, making all emotions okay to talk about and express.
Mm.
That, you know, anger can be expressed appropriately,
mm-hmm.
but it can still be expressed
mm-hmm.
and not perfectly, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
so that for sure. And then these kids struggle with that. These kids with these temperaments struggle with expressing emotion,
mm.
But making it okay. Talking about big, strong feelings, mad feelings, sad feelings, all of that is
mm-hmm.
okay to have.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is to really help these kids talk back to the societal teaching. And the way that they do that, it's like, you know, when kids are little, all they're doing every day is absorbing the family's values,
mm-hmm.
what the family thinks is important. What the family believes in. That's a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
And so incorporating the talk back that parents do when kids are in earshot, they will absorb the value. So you don't sit down with a kid and say, now we're going to teach. So you
open
pay
your
attention.
Ears and mind.
Yes, you listen to me right now because mm-hmm. here are our
mm-hmm.
values.
Mm-hmm.
No. It's really like if mm-hmm. you've got a daughter and you've got some of your friends over,
mm-hmm.
moms, sit and talk purposefully within earshot
mm.
about how ridiculous it is about one thing or another. Why can't every woman love
mm-hmm.
their body no matter
mm-hmm.
what it,
mm-hmm.
what size they
mm-hmm.
are?
I love that.
And have that kind of talk going so that the kid hears it. And mm-hmm. if you keep that kind of talk going, you're talking with your husband, talking with your wife, whoever it is, so that boys and girls are both hearing this talk, or even, you know, if you're in the grocery store, that's not even real. That person doesn't look like that. Oh my goodness, this mm-hmm. is so ridiculous. Mm-hmm. This has been photoshopped. Mm-hmm. That people don't look like this. Mm-hmm. People aren't made to look like this. This isn't real. We don't believe in this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, really doing that kind of healthy talk that mm-hmm. kids will just pick up on. They'll just listen to it.
But please, with the mixed signals, because then mom comes back and says, do I look fat in these jeans?
You got to keep that word out.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And also how kids absorb how you talk and how you think about yourself.
Your own body.
Yeah. You, that you don't know, but they see and absorb everything. If before you leave, you go in front of the mirror and you're like, oh God, I got to change these pants. They look terrible. I can see my da 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 da. They see everything. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
see it all. So you can't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like, this is actually where dads, because I run a men's group, which is really a dad's group.
Yeah.
But it, you know, you have to have a Y chromosome to come. The dads are extremely influential to both boys, but especially for the girls, because the girls will pick up on what dad thinks is attractive.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if dad is looking at and talking about what he thinks is attractive mm-hmm. in a woman, mm-hmm. the daughter will identify with that mm-hmm. and want to align with that.
That makes sense.
So if the dad is saying things like, you know, I love mama's curves and, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and some mm-hmm, stuff I probably shouldn't mm-hmm. say on the podcast.
Wait, it's fine. We covered it all. Okay. You're good. You could say it all.
Okay, good. So then the daughter will hear that mm-hmm. and incorporate that as a value.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why the African-American population has always been safer from eating disorders.
I was going to say,
because
for sure.
bodies, the female body has been celebrated mm-hmm. for the curves mm-hmm. And the men have celebrated
and love out
and yeah. love the curves.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. But my mother was always on a diet. I think my mother was on a diet from the time I was 12 till I was 20. Yeah. You know, she just, I don't know.
So you absorbed that.
I did. Mm-hmm. And I, too, then felt like I needed to be on mm-hmm. something. And so that started a lot of yo-yo yeah. dieting. And, of course, right. you know, nobody, you know, mm-hmm. everybody's done that.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's okay for adults to, like, change their eating habits.
Sure, and
to make changes. Like,
yeah.
But how you talk about it is key.
It's yeah. how you talk
yeah.
about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
Right.
Like, I'm making this choice because it feels better for my body. Mm-hmm. And don't ever talk about I'm losing weight. My goal is to lose weight. Like, do not say it. Like, I do not. Mm-mm.
Don't like, talk do not. Like that.
Like, it would be, I'm making this choice because it feels better in my body. I like that this food has more fuel. Like, mm-hmm. it has more protein.
And right. we talk to be healthy and strong.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And mm-hmm. we talk to our kiddos about the components of food, right? Like, okay, well, you know, that you need to eat more of your beans because that's what has protein.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, mm-hmm. That's what it is. And that helps you have strong muscles. That helps you grow. And that's how you can run fast and play soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. like, talk about food as fuel and not as the enemy.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, sometimes I don't talk about food as bad on purpose because I've worked in an eating disorder unit.
Yeah.
Not in my house. So, you know, I don't talk about food as being bad or mm-hmm. like, I would never tell my kid, don't, like, candy's bad. Sugar's bad. It's going to make you fat. Like, I don't ever say that, but my girls come home and say that because they pick it up from the environment.
Yeah, they pick it up.
They pick it up. Oh, you know, like, oh, I shouldn't eat that because that's not good for me. I'm like, let me worry about your nutrition.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I've got it.
Yeah.
Like, you're
yeah.
okay.
That's
I'll let you know when there's a problem.
It's why the early front loading of this before they get to middle school is so
yes.
important. Because mm-hmm. once they get to middle school, grown-ups are dumb. And mm-hmm. the smartest people they know are their peers.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you front loaded it well or well enough, right?
I know, I'm working on
you
being
have to
good,
be
enough.
Good enough. Just good enough. Then you've really given them all the armor that you could.
Mm-hmm.
You've done everything that you could at that point.
Are there ways that parents, how can you help them build up that self-esteem, to build up that shield? Because they will get all of those images. They will. You know, they're going to see it. So are there things that you think that parents can do to help them shield them from those sorts of things?
I mean, beyond talking about it, like we've been discussing, I think that there's there's a very significant commonality in our patient population when it comes to the parents. Now, we don't think that parents cause eating disorders by any form or fashion. Mm-hmm. We do not. Mm-hmm. But because these kids have this temperament, this super feeling, cautious, worried, they're such anxious little beings. Mm-hmm. What tends to emerge around that is an overprotective parent because they're so worried about what might happen or what they might feel because they're big feelers. And so it's not that the parent is trying to be overprotective, but what ends up happening is that they're a little bit too much. They're a little bit too worried about what might happen if, and that's problematic because it starts to restrict the experiences of life for that kid, the robust experiences of life for that kid, because these kids are naturally introverted. You know, they might have one friend. And introverts only really need one or two friends, and that's normal.
Thank you.
Right? That's
yes,
fine.
Yes, it is.
but they tend to say no to things.
Yeah.
And parents have to push back on that no sometimes to get their kids' level of experience. Because, you know, I tell the dads this all the time. I said, part of your role is to help foster this feeling that I can do it in your child. I need you to help that happen. Usually dads do better teaching little kids how to ride a bike.
Yes.
Right?
And because, take risks.
Right. Mommies are nurturers by nature. And dads kind of laugh off when they fall down off the bike when they're learning to ride it. They're not that worried about it.
Yeah.
So it needs to have a lot of that in it so that the kid develops a sense of agency. That I can do this. I can tackle that.
Yeah.
Because there is something about I heard a comedian call it the C generation of the children today, the coddled generation. And the kids and young adults will say to me all the time, but it's hard.
You're like, yeah.
And in their brain, that means don't do it.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to do it. It's hard.
Yeah.
Oh, God. No, hard means do it. Hard means learn it. Hard means figure it out and get to the other side of it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But if you have that sort of anxious temperament who's like, you're not going to take those risks. Right. You're going to stay more into yourself. And then if you have a parent who is overprotective and doesn't want to expose this kiddo who seems very vulnerable.
That's right.
Then they just, but they, in their protection, they box them in.
Yeah. I've never met a kid with an eating disorder that was made out of porcelain.
That's true. But you have to show them that because everyone thinks they are.
That's right.
But you're a parent, for instance, and your child has an issue. You've got other family members who are sitting around that table saying, this kid needs to eat. What's going on over here?
And they why can't you just give them pizza?
Yeah.
We hear just that. Just make them eat pizza.
Yeah. Right. And are very critical of their weight and what they look like. How do parents handle dealing with that auntie who, you know, knows everything, but is coming with her own brand of psychology?
Right. Yeah.
Very kind way to put it.
I think you have to tell them, stop it.
Okay.
I mean, you have to be direct and say, listen, this is my kid and I'm figuring it out and we're doing it. I'd like you on board helping me, but I really can't do it with what you're dishing out. So setting a limit and having a boundary.
Boundaries.
Yeah.
Boundaries.
Yeah. You just have to talk right to it.
Yes.
And say, this won't help and it'll actually make things worse if you don't stop.
And if, and I bet that's probably hard.
It is.
For those parents because they've probably suffered the auntie's ire, right? And so it's hard for them to like branch out and do it, but you have to realize you're protecting your kid in doing that.
And, you know, apples don't fall far from trees. So if there's a super feeler kid, there's going to be a super feeler parent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Especially when there's a grandparent and that's hard for a parent who is a child themselves.
Right.
And here comes mom with all of this you know, and you're trying to, but mom, I'm handling, I'm dealing. And then having to do that boundary thing with your own mother. It's just, we all need to come sit into the office. We all need to sit down on the couch because that's really difficult, particularly when we're going to sit down at the table together and we're having, you know, Thanksgiving dinner or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I don't.
I mean, there's a way to get people better from eating disorders. We do it every day. I do it for a living.
Yeah.
I help people get better.
Yeah.
And when we have like divorced families, I like it when there's a mom and a stepdad and a dad and a stepmom. Mm-hmm. If they work together.
100%.
If they don't work together, then I get them in a room and I pick a fight.
Okay. Okay.
I love it.
I pick a fight.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I've got to get them to do this the way I need them to do it. Because if they do it the way I need them to do it, I can help their kid get better. Because I know how to treat eating disorders. Mm-hmm. And I need grownups to behave.
Mm. Oh, 100%.
I need them to talk and play nicely. And then I've said to parents, your kid doesn't stand a chance if you keep doing what you're doing. You'll be back and I'll be ready to take you. And maybe then you'll do it differently. Mm-hmm. But if you don't start doing what I tell you to do, you're not going to be able to help your kid once they leave. I just have to hand it right to them.
Yeah.
It's very true. Wow. And I mean, because think about this kid who is a people pleaser in the middle of two parents who hate each other openly and
have
talk
spouses
about it
now together. Yeah.
And
yeah.
then put the kiddo in the middle of it.
That.
Right. And I feel like a lot of times for older kids, not the younger ones, but it's like, this is something I control. I can control.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's.
And you shouldn't have to.
Right.
Pumpkin.
Right. Right. But yes. No, I could not agree with you more. Parents, you got to co-parent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And those poor kids in the middle who think they can control both sides, that's a lot of pressure.
Oh, it is a lot of pressure on a kid. It's a
I'm
lot.
Trying to please everybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh.
And it can happen in a married.
Yeah.
You know, 100%. Dad's got one philosophy of what needs to be done to raise a kid. Mom has a very different philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
It really becomes at some point no different than, you know, an ex who you can't stand.
That's very true.
You know, I'll say to parents all the time that are divorced, I go, listen, I know you didn't get divorced so that you could spend more time together.
There's a reason.
I got it. But you are going to do better than you're doing. You have to. Your kid's life is depending on it. And the parents that are married. I said, listen, the fact that you guys differ so widely on what needs to happen in the home means that your kid is stuck and will stay stuck until you do it differently.
Mm.
You don't have to be perfect, but you've got to be on the same page.
I have some parents who say, like, I can't change. Like, I am who I am and I can't change. And I'm like, okay, but wait, you were expecting either medication or a 9-year-old to magically figure this out and to be better. Like, no, you're the adult. You can. You are in control of your life and what you contribute to your kid's life. But I have parents that tell me, like, I can't change.
No,
like, this, it just is who I am.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, that's a total cop out.
Yes.
That's because it's 100% not true.
Mm-mm. Exactly.
If it were true, why would anybody get therapy?
Right.
Mm-mm. Nobody would. Yeah. We wouldn't need therapists anymore because we would just declare that it's impossible for anybody to do anything different.
But I think a lot of times adults, parents want to bring a kid to therapy, you know, either for eating disorders or anything, because it's like, okay, well, you fix them. And it's like, no, kids don't exist in a vacuum.
Mm.
Like, we have to change and support them because their kids are developing. They don't know.
Mm.
I tell parents all the time, I go, listen, we are family-based treatment.
Yes.
I have expectations that you will come to twice a week family therapy. You will attend all the family educations. I don't expect you to do it perfectly, but I expect you to attend.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are not like a dry cleaning service where you take your clothes, drop them off, they clean them up. When they're done, you pick them up and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what this is.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-uh. No, not at all.
Nope.
I remember a figure from residency. So from the first presentation for an eating disorder until whenever we're in recovery, how long is that process?
5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm. I had 7 in my head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
5 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you get them young and quickly, you know, you're going to shorten that time period.
Mm-hmm.
Probably considerably. So acting quickly. You know, sometimes we say, giving a lecture, I'll say, listen, if you can't get this on an outpatient setting turned around within 2 to 3 weeks, now you've got to have significant progress happening. Mm-hmm. If you don't have progress happening, or you've got the reverse, like they're continuing to lose weight because they're not eating, you actually won't be able to turn it around on an outpatient level.
Because it just digs in.
Yeah. You've got to get them into a higher level of care.
What are the things that parents can look for? Like, how do they know?
How do they know to come to you? It's time. Pick up the phone.
Well, in an outpatient setting, you need at minimum a therapist and a dietitian.
Mm-hmm.
Minimum.
Mm-hmm.
But you probably also need a child psychiatrist.
But you need a therapist and a dietitian trained in eating disorders.
You do.
Who say it's time to go.
Okay. And there's all kinds of things that they will try to do to set limits around the eating disorder with the kid,
mm-hmm.
teach the parents up, try to get the ball rolling.
Right.
So trying to do it on your own is just not going to work. I've never seen it work, really, because eating disorders are too powerful.
They're tricky.
Yeah. Mm. But the team is often the ones that say, because our referral basis is a lot of therapists, a lot of dietitians.
Mm.
Psychiatrists, you know, if you don't know a lot about eating disorders, you just don't know a lot.
You'll miss it. Because you're focused on everything else.
Yeah, it's massive.
Right.
We could do this podcast for days and I could keep talking about eating disorders. It's so big.
Yes, no.
Absolutely.
And it's so hard and complicated to get them better.
Wow. Yes.
There's nothing easy about it.
But I think pediatricians are a good first spot, right?
For sure.
Like whenever kiddos are falling off.
Because they're looking at BMIs.
Yes, mm-hmm. and they've dropped and we've lost 13 pounds.
Right.
And we're like, okay, now we're, you know, like,
yeah.
So if you have a question, you're like.
First line of defense.
Mm-hmm. And be aware, teenagers mm-hmm. are sneaky, like, mm-hmm. and they're smarter than we are,
mm-hmm.
and they know it. And so they're going to dress in baggy clothes, yeah. and it may not, at some point, though, you will see it, and you'll be like, oh, we have a problem.
And you don't want a pediatrician that says, oh, I mean, they're thin, but, I mean, I don't know that it's anorexia. I don't know that they're skinny enough to have anorexia.
Ooh.
They will be in a hot minute.
Uh-huh.
They will be real fast if
you
say
that. Oh, my gosh. This has been eye-opening.
I know.
And I don't have an eating disorder.
I know. How do you support parents?
Yeah, you do. And it's fascinating to think that these kids don't have filters and that they absorb so much.
Oh, everything affects. Everything has an effect, a powerful effect.
Yeah.
So life is felt traumatically.
Need to build them up because I don't have that either. I don't have that problem. I have a big filter. I have a wall.
Yeah. That's how you do what you do, though, right?
I don't. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Are we already done?
I know. It's. But before we go, we have one question, and we're starting to ask everybody because, you know, the Raising Joy podcast is Raising Joy, but a lot of times our topics are pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to talk about what are you grateful? One thing, what are you grateful for?
On a personal level?
Either way.
Either way. Well, I'll give you two.
Okay, great.
At work, in fact, I have a physician assistant that I work closely with,
mm-hmm.
and I said, isn't it just so amazing to watch them get better? To have them so sick when they come in, and mm-hmm. to see
this kid
emerge, this fun, vibrant, funny kid
mm-hmm.
that wasn't the kid that admitted. So we watch our kids get better. We watch our adults get better. So that I'm always grateful for. It's why I love working with eating disorders because you really do a lot when you're doing the work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's hard. It's not easy. The work is, your role
it's
is
hard.
Not hard. It's not
hard.
Easy.
Right.
It's hard.
But I'm tough. Like Setlif and I are tough. You know,
and we met her. She came on the podcast. Mm-hmm. We know she's a tough gal.
Yeah, we're not putting up with an eating disorder.
I love it.
That's got to go.
Okay,
I love it.
Right.
Okay.
And then the other is a little grandbaby.
Oh, congratulations!
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Sweetest little baby in the world.
Okay,
well, she's not a baby anymore. She's 4.
Oh, well,
just
still.
Four. Yeah.
With an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I have one of those in my house too.
So this is personal. I just had some landscaping done in my house. So I'm talking to the landscaper and, you know, she's got all these ideas and she's doing one thing then and another. And I honestly did not know how this was going to turn out. And I'm spending, you know, considerable, you know, coin on this, and not to have a better thought of what it's going to turn out. And this is my front yard, not my backyard, so everybody going to see it. But true enough, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful it turned out well.
That's because, amazing.
You know, and the whole objective is you want your neighbors to be jealous and ask. You
know? Well, yeah.
But it turned out well. I was so grateful that I had so much anxiety. And I'm never really that way, but I was very anxious about how these few plants and, you know, some mulch and some stones and how this was all going to pull together and how it was going to look and present. And I just bought a new house. So yeah. I'm like, I'm really wanting this to feel good. But, you know, it all came together. I was on my knees about it. I'm very grateful for that. Nice.
And I am grateful for my friends who are good enough moms and who encourage me to be a good enough mom.
Okay.
And I'm going to keep telling them to be good enough moms, but it's so hard whenever.
But you're going to tell yourself too.
100%.
When you feel that thing coming on that says,
be extra.
I need to make the ukulele.
Go to 100.
Yeah. No.
Yes. Permission. I'm grateful for giving myself permission to be good enough. That's enough.
That's it. That's all we need.
Love it.
I'm glad. I love this.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Raising Joy. We're so glad that you joined us. Until next time, just breathe.
Open up.
You matter.